We didn't actually talk about the chart, the Enigma of Life, but it was in your materials and your reading materials, and it may not be altogether explanatory. The first question is, how do you respond to the chart? Questions, comments, whatever. The Enigma of Life and the teaching of Genesis 1 and 2. And we'll start here with Janice. That's good. That's what it's supposed to be.
Okay. I found it to be interesting, stimulating, and challenging, but I feel uneasy about trying to fit current scientific data into an interesting view of the Bible instead of the other way around. I found it interesting, stimulating, and challenging, but I feel uneasy about trying to fit current scientific data into an interpretation of the Bible instead of the other way around. Scientific data is always changing with new methods of dating or archaeological findings, etc. are discovered. It does seem that the only logical place for a pause in creation, though, is after the flood of Genesis 1.
What kind of a creation? A positive creation?
No, a pause in creation. Possibly a pause in creation. And I thought that was the logical place. It's in a place to
Okay, I'm not sure I ever referred to a pause. I don't know what you mean by a pause in creation.
A new
beginning. Yeah, okay. All right, that's a good answer. How about you?
Well, I thought that it actually makes a lot of sense. I heard you talk about it before, so that helps. It has a little bit of meaning. It makes sense to me that God can not only create for the first time, but can also be recreated or make new. Even in my Bible, it's been that way. It seems like chapter 4, it talks about other people being on earth, so it makes sense that there were already people, and that God created new people at that time in the Garden of Eden. It also makes sense the asteroid hitting the earth at that time in that part of the earth. And we're being about missing how that seems to fit in with the picture in Genesis 1. And also the fall of Satan coming before Genesis 1 and causing destruction and evil before Genesis 1 seems to make sense as well, because he comes in Genesis 1 already, was already there and comes in the form of a snake.
Paul.
Like Marjorie said, we've heard from you from time to time. This helped the more pieces fit together. But we don't have evidence in our hands, just the statement that many scientists tend to believe it. It's theoretically possible.
Stop. Let's go back.
Let's
have a little noise break.
Oh. Yeah, don't go on. Hey, the door squeaks, so you can't.
You can't come back in.
I think I maybe better turn my cell phone off, too.
Everybody.
Yeah, well, we're going to try to get Matt back in here.
Okay.
Is yours off, Ralph?
Yes.
I've even had interpreters who left their phone off on when I was preaching.
Okay, here we're going to go to Paul for his comment.
Like Marjorie, we had heard some of this from you at various times in meetings, but this helped to have more pieces come together. I haven't had the chart in my hands before, but we don't have evidence as such, and of course, distant past, we can't have lots, but I think of Josh McDowell's book, say, Evidence That Demands a Verdict, it would be good to have a lot of that. It's theoretically possible. I think we need to exercise care that we neither depreciate God's ability nor the loyalty of those we seek to enlist.
Well, now, speaking of evidence, the chart you're looking at, the second part of it, the colored part in the middle, covers 600 million years. And those little triangles are the result of evidence of a sort. After the moon landing, geologists got very excited about tracking down craters on the Earth, And they, after a number of years and thousands of people involved, developed criteria for the evidence of craters. And I don't know exactly how they came to these conclusions. I will grant you, I haven't presented you the evidence that they're looking at. But they're not making this up. They have evidence, which may or may not be true. But it's the usual kind of evidence. It's not that they went into a prayer closet and God revealed to them that there were 45 craters larger than 15 miles across. So that is a kind of an evidence. And as Janice says, scientists are always changing their minds about dating methods and so forth. And there used to be carbon-14, which of course wouldn't stretch back to 600 million years. It's only worth about 6,000 or 20,000. But there are 14 other methods of dating. And very often these methods corroborate each other. So the science of dating is really a rather amazingly developed. It's by no means a certain thing. In fact, we have said several times that we're not talking about certainties, we're talking about possibilities. Then in terms of Janice's response about fitting the science into the Bible, I'm not sure that's the right phrase. It's not that we're trying to push science into the Bible. In fact, in this case, we're saying it all happened before the Bible. So it's outside the Bible completely. But again and again, down through history, people have discovered what it was the Bible was really referring to because of scientific discoveries. For example, Psalm 19, 4, 5, and 6, which talks about the sun rising and so forth. Luther and Calvin, who were very intelligent people, stoutly demanded that this meant that a person... The door makes too much noise, so I have to start over again. But we don't want to lose a credit student.
You were at Luther and Calvin Fox. Excuse me,
Bob and Fox. Bob, I'm just trying to make sure.
We remember that Luther and Calvin, who were very intelligent people, and certainly devout study students of the Bible, who insisted that the Bible meant that the sun goes around the earth on the basis of Psalm 19, 4, 5, and 6. And it does perhaps give that impression, because that is, in fact, the actual impression you get when you look at the sun. It rises up here and goes down over there. So there's nothing untrue about it. But at the same time, they assumed that the scientific observations of planetary structure that implied that the earth goes around the sun couldn't possibly fit into the Bible. And this is a case, a rather outstanding case, where actually we find that the Bible doesn't conflict with science. And so it's not a case of putting the Bible, science into the Bible. The question is the Bible saying something that that conflicts with science? And I think that whether the scientific story that they're bringing up is true or not, it's a relief to know that so far as we can see, the Bible doesn't conflict with it, and it doesn't prove anything. It just, it does prove that the Bible is not necessarily at fault, because in Luther and Calvin's case, lamentably, a ripple of disbelief flowed all through Europe. The Bible must be wrong. It's because they insisted that the Bible said this, science said that, and therefore the Bible must be wrong, rather than Luther and Calvin being wrong. So we want to work very hard to avoid the possibility that our interpretations are incorrect. We believe in an inerrant Bible, but not inerrant interpretations. And there's a big difference. Okay, other people who would like to comment on this question? And by the way, comments on the chart itself would be welcome. Not merely what it means, but how it's constructed, if there's any ambiguities or confusing things, we'd like those to be brought out. Yes, Bob.
Well, my comment is more of a question. When I look at this chart, it strikes me that my overall impression is that of discontinuous evolution, so we call it that. So my question is, how do scientists, and this is published in Scientific American, how do atheists and scientists deal with this evidence that seems to get in the way of evolution as a continuous, gradual development?
Well, yeah, this is really a very interesting comment, because it's perfectly obvious that the so-called Cambrian explosion, as well as all these other extinction events, is the phrase they use, where new life was then created afterwards, often quite different forms of life, that this really, this would have given Darwin nightmares. Fortunately, he didn't know most of this stuff. But in a kind of a curious, backhanded way, it shows that the science are willing to face things that would absolutely destroy their theories. And it is true that the Cambrian explosion is the single largest contrary event to gradual evolution. It's just absolutely is a nightmare to try to fit it in. Now, it is true, though, that people like Stephen Gould, who's one of these Richard Dawkins-type famous expositors of evolution, have come up with phrases like punctuated equilibrium, which is fancy enough to gloss over some kind of a glaring thing that's contrary to their theory. But and it's also true, and I have to admit, that the Cambrian explosion, while in a graph like this, is a very sudden event happening instantaneously, you might say. If you look right into the details, it runs over a 30 million period. And they say, oh, well, as I was reading just a couple of days ago, that in 30 million years, quite a few things can happen. So they still sneak in the gradualism there. And so they do live with it. But the very fact that they admit these truths, and there's quite a wide consensus that there is the Cambrian explosion, is some sort of evidence that there's a certain amount of honesty even within the so-called much maligned scientific community. But now, what about the chart itself for a second? Do you feel, and the question is, how do you respond to the chart? Part of that would be, would there be a better way to draw this chart? I've tried over the years to draw all this expanse of time in many ways, but when you're talking about something which, like in that middle section with all the color, covers 600 million years, the length of time for the period of human beings is thinner than the thickness of a piece of paper at the end of that scale. It's 2 seconds out of a 24-hour period. If the 600 million years is, or 500 million years is 24 hours, then the human period is just 2 seconds. And that is very hard to put all in one graph, unless you were using a logarithmic graph, but I can't find my logarithmic paper from years ago in engineering school. Anyway, any other comment from anybody as to the form of the chart? And we'll get on to the meaning again in a minute. Anybody? Okay.
Now, this doesn't show anywhere like the ice ages and stuff. Are the ice ages supposed to be in this section down here below?
Well, I simply didn't put the ice ages in. They could have been plotted on this scale.
And what is the relationship between these massive craters that are showing up in the last 65 million years and extinction of animals as we know them? In other words, it shows the extinction of the dinosaurs, but wouldn't the large mammals and the hominids, I mean, wouldn't these other species also be have been killed off in huge numbers by some of these other large impacts?
Well, mammals, for example, didn't really come into their own until the dinosaurs were gone. So that's a very recent period. And there are some extinction events, but they're smaller ones. The only extinction event on the whole chart that almost kills all life is right in the middle, the one that goes way up to 97.5% of all life. The ones that follow the extinction of dinosaurs, you'll notice, are very recent and all very small, by comparison to the 65 million year ago asteroid that collided with Yucatan Peninsula in a 100-mile wide crater. All the craters following that are very small, so that a great deal of life actually did survive all other extinction events following the dinosaur period. And even in the dinosaur period, not all the forms of life were extinguished. The dinosaurs were, but apparently a lot of undersea life survived.
Some alligators, I mean, there are animals that are previous to all of these periods that still survived.
That's right. There's never been a time when all life was extinguished. On the other hand, there's a lot of things not on this chart, like volcanic eruptions and earthquakes and tsunamis and so forth. This chart only records the volcanic and the asteroidal impact craters.
About the Yellowstone volcano being a major eruption that affected broad areas, not only North America but worldwide. I wonder if it'd be important to put something like that on here. As we're talking about extinction events. Is that something? You can
Which say? One?
Well, the Yellowstone volcano, the hot spot in that's currently around Yellowstone, but it used to be in Utah and so on. Is that something you consider doing?
Well, I didn't draw the graph. You understand? So. Maybe it's on there, because volcanic eruptions are on that graph. I haven't pointed them out because I don't think they're quite as significant as the asteroidal collisions, but on the other hand, they may be too recent to even show up, because this chart is 600 million years, and what if it was 100,000 years ago, it wouldn't even show up in the chart. Yeah.
The blue boxes at the bottom represent eruptions.
Yeah. Exactly. But I haven't pointed those out because, except for one in Siberia, which apparently blasted all life in a 1,000-mile area, they don't seem to have quite the killing power that the larger asteroidal collisions do.
Can we move on to the next question so we get all these in?
All right. I might just say before we leave question one, we've been talking about the nature and structure of the chart itself. Is there any one more question as to the meaning of all this? The fact that you've got an old Earth and a young Earth both in the same chart is one of the important achievements, if it's true, because it allows people who believe in a young Earth and people who believe in an old Earth to sleep in the same hotel room, even. And that's something. Yes, Bob.
In this article, as well as in this, with regard to the chart, thus far you have commented on the opposing forces in creation, the intelligent creator and an intelligent evil that have had a competing influence in creation. But this chart talks about destruction, and I have not yet read anything where you talk about whether destruction was strictly evil or whether God also played a factor in these destructive events, because you have suggested that perhaps some of the mass extinctions have been God saying, nope, this is wrong, reset, restart. It's sort of his, reset button. So would you like to comment on the forces of good and evil in destruction?
Well, like you say, this is mainly a chart showing destruction. Following every one of these collisions, life was recreated or redeveloped, and in many cases, very puzzlingly for the evolutionists, completely different forms of life appeared. Mammals went from 2 pounds to 2 tons, for example, and there are a lot of confusing things. We will, in the next lesson, be talking a little more about the possibility of punishment, but think of it this way. It isn't, I don't believe, that God has a keyboard. And one of the keys he can push is asteroidal collision. Another one is tsunami. If there is a judgment connected with these disasters, I would think that by a method which we can't possibly fathom, he coordinates things that Satan does with what he wants to accomplish. In fact, it must be very frustrating for Satan, for everything he does evil, for God to make good out of it. That must be very frustrating. But God is in the coordination of events in some ways, rather than simply in causing them himself. But we can talk about that in the next lesson. Let's go on to the second question. How do the first four mysteries compare in terms of suddenness of origin? Okay, we'll start again, this time with Paul.
In all of these, we're depending on projections of deductions made. The deductions are made in our time. Numbers 1 and 2 might have been developmental, it seems, whereas
3 and 4 are stated as sudden change.
All right. How about you?
I thought that an inorganic matter must have been created as a whole in a short period, whereas inorganic could have developed from the organic over a longer period.
Yeah, say it again. The organic was sudden and the inorganic was gradual?
Right.
Well, the inorganic came before the organic, right? Yeah, matter, just the atomic system is called inorganic. Inelegantly, there should be a respectable name for it, but it's so much, even though there are hundreds of thousands of inorganic chemical combinations and molecules, compared to the organic, it's so much simpler that it's condescended to with this phrase, inorganic. It's like non-Western nations. There isn't any good name for the non-Western nations. But go ahead. Okay, the inorganic was, you say, gradual or sudden? Okay. That's the Big Bang, so-called. According to the theory, it happened very rapidly. In fact, I don't even think it makes any sense for it to have happened at 3,153.6 billion times faster than the speed of light. I just don't have the faith to believe that. But that's what the theory says. But if it's true, and we're talking about if it's true all along here, if it's true, then you're right. It was a very sudden event. Now, okay, the second of them...
It could have been sudden, but not that fast.
That's right. There are different degrees of suddenness. You'd be willing for a million years to be sudden. Okay. And
the whole of the span of time, then... These terms are all relative anyway.
Well, as a matter of fact, stop and think. If the universe was 13.7 billion years ago and the Earth was 4.5 billion years ago, it took 9.5 billion years for both the universe and the Earth to be created. And that's not exactly very sudden. 9.5 billion years, that's not really sudden. So even the inorganic universe, apparently, according to these theories, has been in the process of creation. And even now, there are constantly new stars being created in galaxies and all kinds of things in an expanding universe. This is the really puzzling thing. You know, I really wonder how cosmologists can ever sleep through the night. They've got such a vast profusion of contradictory pieces of evidence, and it's getting worse all the time. You hear cosmologists saying, frankly, the universe is absolutely inscrutable. That doesn't, no matter what you say, it turns out not to be quite true, and they go on and on, and cosmology is probably the most tricky, unexpectable sphere of science. So, okay, now what about the other mysteries?
The Cambrian explosion was more of a sudden.
Yeah, fairly sudden, 20, 30 million years. Okay.
And then also human life appeared at a point in time. Does it look like the links back to some of these other things like Neanderthals are really
clear? Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, the appearance of new species, whether humans or anything else, always seems to be fairly sudden. This is, one of the problems of evolution, that the so-called absence of links is very, very... unhappy. If you were describing the evolution of the American automobile, you could talk about automobiles getting slightly larger and fancier and all that sort of thing. But then all of a sudden an automobile has an engine in the back. And then all of a sudden you have big SUVs and small cars and all those things. And so here's a case where evolution of any kind does, especially the kind of the automobile where there are thousands of intelligent engineers at work, which I think is parallel to the development of life, where you have thousands of intelligent intermediate beings at work. There are obviously sudden new models and types of life, and so that would certainly be true. Well, what about the fourth mystery? Oh, that was it. Okay. All right, let's go on over here. Any other answers?
No, I felt like it looked to me like they were all pretty sudden.
Okay. Janice?
Yeah, I felt the same way. In fact, I liked what the attorney used, Lily Bang, for Human Life, the merger of ovum and the sperm. And if you've ever seen those movies, it really is pretty amazing, the Mystery of Life movie, you know, which shows how quickly that happens.
Yeah.
So they all seem to be pretty sudden.
Of course, 9 months isn't exactly sudden. But anyway, any other comments from others than the credit students? Yes?
Do you think God intended for the hominids and the Neanderthals to be part of his plan to defeat Satan, and then figured out that wasn't working so well, so he created humans?
I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't ask any questions at the time. It does seem that there was sort of some kind of a plot, or let's say a plan unfolding as life developed into larger and larger forms and so forth. It is a little bit discouraging for the evolutionists that the largest dinosaurs were earlier than the smaller ones later. But anyway, sometimes I've fantasized that God was expecting the good angels who were working on the development of life to develop creatures intelligent enough to really fight back against the distorting powers of Satan. And I think in a way the modern human animal, if you wish to call it that, is very much clearly in that category. And I suppose that there was a race, an arms race, to develop more and more intelligent forms of life that could actually react against distortion. But that's about all I can think of. Over here.
In your reading, have you encountered anything that deals with the fact that time is relative to things like speed and mass, and if the mass of the universe was concentrated and things were exploding faster than the speed of light, time basically goes to zero? And so while we're looking back from our perspective and we're sort of gauging time from our particular vantage point of the universe, if something was actually involved in the entire explosion, time would virtually cease to exist. Have you read anything about how they look at that?
Well, it is true that I think Einstein had this theory that nothing could possibly go faster than the speed of light, which causes lots of trouble for the Big Bang theory. And obviously those who are talking openly about the Big Bang theory are talking about speeds which defy all imagination. I mean, again, 3,153.6 billion times as fast as the speed of light is awfully fast. And I really don't think there's any good reason to believe that. It's just a theory. And We're working at every point with theories and conjectures and possibilities, and the fact that light wouldn't necessarily stand at the same speed seemed perfectly reasonable and possible. But, of course, human beings don't know enough to pass judgment, really, on things like that. Well, now, this question says, how do these mysteries compare in suddenness? What about other types of comparison? Now, this is an unfair extension of the question, but notice how different these different events are. And they're all equally mysterious in the sense that the certainties are way out in left field. You just can't talk about certainties, but we're talking about very, very different kinds of events. For example, the mystery one, the origin of matter itself, that's a huge, huge reality. It's in my lifetime, 1 year after I was born, actually, that they discovered that our galaxy is not the whole thing, that there are other galaxies. And across the years since that time, about 79 years, they have come to the conclusion that there are not 10 or 15 other galaxies, or maybe 100, or maybe 1 million, or 1 billion, but there are many billions of other galaxies. Now, this is a huge operation. On the other hand, you take the mystery of life. So far as we know, and everybody is trying their best to find out otherwise, it's only in one of those billions of galaxies, only in one of the stars in that galaxy, only in one of the planets of one of those stars, is there anything such as life. So here you have two mysteries that are radically different in that sense. One is an enormously complex thing far beyond the imagination, and the other is really pretty big, of course. We who live on the Earth think we're a pretty big outfit, 8,000 miles in diameter, but this is a very small corner of the universe. And then you go on down, and again, you bring in the matter of the compared to the 500 million years, the period of life, which is the fourth mystery, is only 2 seconds. And again, this is very small compared to the other realities we're talking about. So these mysteries are not comparable in that sense at all, in any sense of size. Let's go on to the third question. What principles come to the forefront as a result of the expression of the seven mysteries? Now, you understand that the mysteries themselves are conjectural, and therefore the principles are conjectural. We're not talking about absolute certainties here, just possibilities. But let's go back to Janice for her answer to that question.
Okay, well, I found seven, so I'll only share a couple, but the ones that I found apply to how we approach missions as well as just thinking about it. First one is, if we're confused about whether or not evil is from God, our power in evangelism, sharing our faith, and in mission is certainly hampered. And it's going to be difficult to convince people to become part of God's family and God's kingdom if God is looked at as the source of evil.
Yeah.
The second one is, if we make Jesus Lord, we are enlisted to fight in an all-out war against Satan, evil, disease, corruption, and we can expect suffering and death.
All right.
I really wasn't sure what you meant by this question, so I think my opinion is from Genesis, but I said new beginnings. Was something that I saw happening in the ministry. Sometimes they were judgments, appeared to be judgments. And thirdly, that God was enlisting people to work with him to fight back.
Now, since you use the word fight, I think you are assuming there is someone or some intelligent being to fight. And I think that's one of the main reasons for this whole discussion. Many people have pled with me, literally, almost with tears on their knees, not to talk about Genesis and paleontology and just stick with the Bible. You don't need to talk about all that stuff because, in fact, it was Ruth Tucker in Chicago who said, oh, no, don't bring up that. People will put you into a cage of bizarre people if you even mention things like that. And it is probably very true for some people. Many people, even evangelicals, have simply put the whole book of the early part of Genesis onto a shelf along with Harry Potter and Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and other things, and they don't disbelieve it, but they really don't see how it would have been true. They don't know what it means, and they don't even want to talk about it. And I understand that. But if there is some potential intelligibility, and we can rescue evangelicals from being at each other's throats over the young earth, old earth, and more importantly, if we can understand the vast extension or expanse of evil. For example, the average person can give you a list of evil things. The average evangelical would never put down violence in nature as evil. Most of my life, I've never even thought that anything about nature would have occasioned the accusation that this is somebody other than God who produced that evil. So, in my mind, there's a great value even in these conjectures because at least it, well, you could even say playfully, brings in a rationale for taking seriously our war against evil. And since you mentioned the war against evil, I just mentioned that. All right, how about your answer?
I put down here that secular science doesn't have a satisfactory explanation for those many mysteries, that probably intelligent design is the closest that they come. That we see God as creator, Satan as the originator of evil, who corrupts and distorts. And that from all of this we get the idea that humans are part of the plan to redeem, and the scripture teaches that we're part of that plan. And that man has been given a mandate to make God known, to assist him in overcoming evil, and to restore the creation.
Good. I wonder if at this point, there are any comments about this statement. Early in your reading, you said something about intelligent design coming closest to... Would you repeat that part again?
On the part of secular science,
okay.
Intelligent design is probably the closest they've come to giving any kind of explanation.
Okay, now who would comment on that? On the part of science, intelligent design comes closest to explaining. Okay.
I think that, in fact, they're resisting that because that would take them down the direction of theology. So they may say that there may be some intelligent force, but the idea of intelligent design is understood by scientists to be a theological explanation, and they resist it because of its implication.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, in the realm of science, there is no intelligent design discussion. Scientists refuse to consider it even in the realm of science. So it isn't that the scientists themselves have, the closest they've come is to come up with intelligent design. Intelligent design has been developed by scientists, all right, but they're not considered scientists. They're outcasts, you know. And so that's a very different thing. Yes. Yeah. Paul, how about you?
Going along with that, factors like size, uniformity, quality, and order demand actors on the scene responsible for what we deduce to have taken place long before written history began.
Good. Well, I would just conclude by saying that one of the most important reasons for even taking all this stuff up, which is not your normal Bible study subject matter, is to give some sort of an insight into what is possibly a much wider arena of God's, or I should say, of Satan's activity than the average person thinks about. Satan's greatest achievement, according to my pastor, is that he covers his tracks. To uncover those tracks is a job we have to pursue. And for me, at least in my pilgrimage of thinking, to uncover Satan's tracks in the deforming and the distortion of nature, of producing animals that would tear other animals apart playfully and gradually with maximum suffering, this doesn't seem to be the kind of a nature God would have produced. And if we can pin this on Satan, we have accomplished something real. And that's one of the reasons I have for bringing in something that happened that might have happened 500 years ago. And when I first read that predatory life first appeared in the Cambrian explosion, though the Cambrian explosion is not very often commented upon in that respect, although it is mentioned in a number of secular books, the predatory life first appearing there, my heart leapt in the direction of the theology that could possibly be implied. National Geographic didn't say, now this is when Satan fell, but that's what absolutely whizzed right through my mind. And it's been a very, very interesting speculation. But it's speculation. Well, that's enough for today.